Hello. You are listening to the Carol Connection. With your host, Jared Carol.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Carol Connection. I am your host, Jared Carol, back for another great episode. I do want to take the chance to shout out my last two episodes. I released two in 1 week, which is a first since like the first time I dropped the podcast. The first one was a solo review of 2019, like my whole year as a whole. And I just talked a lot about what led me to the podcast, what I did, and like my 2020 goals going forward. So take a chance to listen to that. I do want feedback on that. I want to see if I should do more solo episodes, if people get any value from those. Please just let me know. It'd be really great. And my other episode, episode 8, with my aunt, Tracy Carol Corcoran. It was a great episode, and she's a preschool teacher and a mother, and it was a really amazing topic to have. And obviously, maybe a little bias come family, but I think people get a lot of value out of that conversation. So check those out at thecarolconnection.simplecast.com, available on all the major platforms as well. Check those out. Toss me a rate, subscribe, all that fun stuff. So switching to today's episode, I'm here with another great guest, this handsome gentleman, Matt Medeiros. How are you doing today, Matt?
Excellent, man. Thank you for having me on today.
I appreciate it on your busy schedule and all that. So let's give the listeners a little background on who you are, what you've been up to, and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, that's perfect. So I just finished my undergraduate degree last semester in biology. I'm actually just finishing up, as of next semester, my master's degree in biotechnology. See, I was doing that at the same time in my junior year. Mm-hmm. I started my master's degree then. So okay. I've just been doing it ever since, and luckily it's almost at the end of the road. And also at the same time, I'm a president of a cannabis company as well. So just grinding to get that really off the ground.
Oh yeah, it's definitely a lot of work, especially with the laws and everything in Massachusetts. So I could definitely see how that's a very hot topic and a busy time too, with getting closer towards obviously the new year and new goals and things like that. So kind of talk to me a little bit about the schooling too. What kind of led you to get into that field?
Yeah, so I was interested in science since middle school. You know, it always interests me. And honestly, the only reason I got into it is my brother. Mm-hmm. My oldest brother, Eddie, actually is a doctor at Rhode Island Hospital. And, you know, he's really the one who really got me interested in the science and kind of what you can really do for people's lives and how you can change that. And so that's exactly how I started getting into the industry and really trying to pursue, you know, actually helping people. So that's how I started.
That's something huge, too, is helping people and having that as a background to pursuing that type of passion is huge. Like, too many people will go into school, like, unfortunately, I think at first my mindset was somewhat like that, where I thought, hey, I need to find a career where I can make the most possible money. And it wasn't about helping people, and it was a selfish mindset to have, and it probably wasn't the best mindset to go into school with. And I think a lot of the pressures too from whether it's parents, society, I don't know where it's come from. It could be both, a combination of both, but that pressure has been put down on there on this generation of just, you got to go to school, you got to do something where it's valuable, you can't go for the arts or like the music or things like that, which is totally wrong. I don't agree with that whatsoever.
Yeah.
So I like the fact that you have that mindset of I want to help people.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, for me, I relatively had that about a year and a half ago. I mean, I was just doing the degree the whole time. You know, I was playing baseball at Framingham. And by the way, that's where I go to school, Framingham State University, for both degrees. Yes. But essentially, I didn't even have that kind of mindset until a year and a half ago, because I was just playing ball and I was just going to school, like just being normal, enjoying it. And until about a year and a half ago, that's when I really locked it in. I got rid of baseball, essentially. You know, I chose a path. I was either, am I going to stay with this? Am I going to be fully committed to the thing I've been, you know, playing since I was a kid? Or am I going to be really serious about what I want to do for the rest of my life? And, you know, like I said, like actually helping people, I made a choice. It was tough. But essentially, I really chose the path that, I mean, I'm still going to do. And when I do this company, and you know, it's never going to go away.
Yeah, that's huge too. I think there's a lot of value too in playing sports past high school too.
Oh, yeah.
especially if you have that opportunity to do so. I think people should be also aware too, like they think it's just a sport. Like once you get to that next level, it becomes more of a job too.
Yeah.
And people forget that. And I think it's good to have that athletic background too in college, because it's a different kind of ball game, really. Like, you're completely going away from your hometown where you probably played baseball, whatever sport you people play with friends your whole life, and now you're in a whole different atmosphere. And whether some people play outside of their towns and stuff is beside the point. It's just putting yourself out there and meeting new people and then coming to that crossroads where you're like, all right, now I kind of have to get some, I have to get serious about what I want to do with my life.
And exactly.
Just everyone hits that. Most people hit that point, unless people are going for an athletic, like they're trying to get drafted or whatever it may be. Yeah. But like, you got to really come down to, what do I want to do with my life? Yeah. A lot of people, they'll go through school and they just skip that part. They're like, they forget about it.
Yeah, you got to take the time to really think about it. And even so, like, overall, when I was playing sports and everything, that's, I mean, I met all of my friends from Framingham, my best friends from Framingham, like all from baseball and just the culture it brought to me. Like, just people from all throughout Massachusetts, all throughout the country, just really opened up my eyes. So, I mean, that was probably one of the most positive things I even have from playing the sport, not just like the dedication of, oh, you know, going to practices, going to gyms, balancing school life, but actually being able to understand other people and where they're coming from. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's huge, is understanding where someone else comes from in their life, because obviously every single person is different.
Yeah.
And I think it was Brock and Rob on two separate episodes. Brock was episode 6, I believe. 6. And then Rob and Zach were episode 5. Both said similar things where they were like, people get inspirations from other people's stories. And even just doing this podcast is something I really love to do, is because now I sit down with someone like yourself who we're friends and all, but this stuff that I'm going to learn throughout this episode that I've probably never even learned, and just like digging deeper into who you are as a person, and someone on the receiving end of this, listening to this, is going to be like, wow, I connect with what he's saying. And like I said in my year in review episode 2, is not every episode is going to be for you.
Hmm.
Not everyone is going to connect to certain episodes, and that's totally fine, because not every person is for you. And I think people just want to like lash out, and this is a huge negativity flowing through, whether it's social media and all that stuff. But I think it's kind of toxic. But tell me some of like the life lessons that you got from playing sports like baseball.
Yeah, definitely. Well, besides, you know, the whole time management aspect and everything, honestly, you really learn how to humble yourself, man. You really, really do. You know, I went through some struggles with ball. I went through some struggles with school because of baseball. I mean, but at the end of the day, what I really learned from, you know, trying to deal with those adversities is really how to really humble yourself and check yourself and really understand exactly, you know, who am I, what am I doing, and how am I actually, you know, being perceived by my actions that I really do. And a perfect example is that is when I actually transferred from Framingham State University to St. Joseph's, Maine to play baseball. I totally left you know, the whole program, everyone I've known. I was really far away from home for me personally. I mean, I'm kind of a homebody, so three and a half hours is a little far for me.
Yeah. I definitely understand where you're coming from, moving my whole fucking shit, moving to Texas, to Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
It creates a whole different, you see things for what they are, and you get a new perspective on life.
So exactly. And when I transferred, you know, it was a whole eye-opener, new people, new places and everything. But I went to, so going to Maine and everything, really trying to understand a whole environment, and I kind of knew Maine, you know, everyone knows the general thing of Maine, you know,
from
beautiful
England, you know,
landscape, everything kind of secluded. But I really found myself in Maine, to be completely honest, and it really humbled me, because, you know, going from Framingham there, I was just like, you know, I know all these people, like I get to see my family, they're an hour away, and then going to Maine, you know, spending 3.5 hours to go home, it's not as, you know, as much as you going to Texas. But honestly, at the end of the day, man, I really found myself, you know, I really enjoyed now the things that I learned in Maine, like going on hikes, going kayaking all the time, and just like absolutely
being in nature. That's huge.
Love nature, man. That's my thing. Yeah,
that's something that Joe Rogan always preached about, and I'm a big listener of Joe Rogan. I don't know about yourself, but
yeah,
that's someone who really inspired me to get into something like podcasting and putting myself out there and dedicating to the grind. And but he preaches nature, and just like people forget, like we're like animals, really. Like we were born into this world to like some of our characters and traits and like subconscious like characteristics are from our ancestors that evolved from creatures that were just basically hunters and gatherers and all the way back. So we have a lot of things that the way we act is probably because of some of that stuff, which is kind of interesting to even think about too. Like, why do we do things the way we do them? And obviously big for people during the winter time is like always like seasonal depression. And like, it's a huge thing. It's like, it's true too, with like, you need to get the sunlight, you need to get that time outside. And or supplement. A lot of people should supplement during the winter, especially up in the New England area as it gets dark very fast. Yeah. But being in nature is huge, and I think being Maine is a great place to find yourself too.
So. Yeah, I don't know how you can't love nature, man. It's its own elegance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just, there's a lot of stuff we get from nature, which obviously we're going to get into in this podcast too going forward. But it's definitely really interesting, and it's nice to see too. I love the way you said that too. Like, I found myself in a place like that, and I think a lot of people can get inspiration from that. Is people are afraid to leave their hometowns or leave, even if it's just moving to like the next town over or something. I mean, it's not as drastic as moving to Maine or moving to Texas, but like getting away from where you're comfortable and putting yourself out in a different zone is only going to make you grow.
Absolutely.
It's huge.
Yeah.
And segueing a little bit too, we guess we want to talk about influences in our life. And I know your parents, and as well as obviously, especially your dad, is a huge influence on your life. Do you want to kind of just like go into that and take as much time as you want to talk about that too?
Okay.
Like, just really hammer home the point too of how that is an influence.
Yeah,
in your
absolutely.
Life.
And honestly, not only my dad, but honestly, my entire family, even outside my nuclear family, is an absolute influence. And so a little background about my dad, just kind of understand him for a little bit, and you know how he affected me. You know, he comes from youngest of 12, and you know, from an early age, you know, they were really poor, man. They were living off almost nothing, and that's something that he really drilled into me from the very first day that I could even remember. It's about the importance of exactly what you have, no matter what, because you know, his brothers and everything, and his sisters, you know, they went through a lot, not having a lot, moving around all the time, and he just really drilled in what it means to really have a home and have a beautiful life, even, you know, if you're still breathing, you're still alive. And that's something he instilled in me, you know, since day one. He taught me absolutely everything that I've ever known. And he's been, you know, not just a father, but an absolute life mentor to me. You know, we joke all the time, and, you know, we say that, you know, he didn't even finish college, actually. He went to Bridgewater State, and he actually left his sophomore year to really take care, you know, of his sisters, really sick, and his mom, you know, was working so much. You know, his dad passed away when he was 12, and essentially he was talking about how, you know, I may not have a degree, and I may not have had, you know, the business degree to even start the very company that we're actually sitting in right now. You know, he really taught me that it doesn't matter as long as your mindset, and we joke all the time, and you know, we say he has a PhD in life. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Just a PhD in life. And so coming from that background too, it's like, it's motivating, and like, it's awesome to see people who come from situations like that and turn it into like what we're seeing right now. Like, obviously we've been friends for a good amount of period of time. So like, I know your dad has been a coach to me in baseball and things like that. And he is a life mentor and like teaches you life lessons through sports, which obviously we mentioned a little bit earlier, lessons through baseball. And I think there's lessons you can gain through any sport you do. And that's why I think those type of organized activities are huge for people to do. And especially kids growing up, is getting involved in those younger organized sports. And I think it's huge that something like that is involved. But yeah, continue with.
Yeah, absolutely. Dad. And going on the sports, especially, we can easily touch on that. I mean, there's a lot of people that he's coached in Seekonk, honestly, you know, throughout, and even in other cities as well, and in towns. But essentially, you know, another thing he really instilled in me is he just loves people, man. He will talk to absolutely anybody that ever existed, like at any time. And I really mean that. Like, we will be, I can't even name a specific location. Like, we're at a location, he's there, he is talking to someone, he has no idea who they are, just because he loves people, man. He loves making connections, he loves trying to understand their perspective. And at the end of the day, he just really loves to see the best out of people come into fruition. I mean, you know, coaching especially, he saw that with all the people he's coached and what he does. I mean, if I was to describe him in one absolute word, he's the definition of passion, man. He's the absolute definition of passion. I mean, you've seen him in personal experience in coaching. I mean, he just gets so passionate. Yeah, like, there are times he might get angry about, you know, a call or something happens, but at the end of the day, man, he is truly passionate because he really wants people to succeed. I mean, remember when we were playing, you know, baseball and everything, and he absolutely wants us to win. Yeah. And he will do everything in his power to make sure that we win. And that's something that, you know, I got to see. I didn't necessarily understand it growing up. I mean, I was young, I was immature, so I didn't really understand where he was coming from and, you know, why he did the things he did. And it took me time to actually realize and appreciate that, honestly. But yeah, I mean, that's one thing he really instilled in me of the many, many things he instilled in me. And even from that, another beautiful aspect that he's taught me is charity. Mm-hmm. I mean, he, again, when I was younger and I was more immature, I didn't necessarily understand it. I was, you know, he's going to do these, you know, these things. He's going away for a little bit, a couple of days, you know, do some charity, go to work, go to events, really network, build up his company. But you know, when he was doing that, I was like, oh, you know, that's what he's doing. It's very normal. But now I actually understand what he's doing on a daily basis and his mindset. You know, for example, this past Thanksgiving, we did a turkey run around the state of Rhode Island and a couple places in Massachusetts where, you know, we fed about, 12,000 people with 2,500 turkeys and bags and everything. We went all around it. It was a whole day. It was like a whole work day, honestly. But, you know, it was all for charity. It was all for people. You know, we got to hand people turkeys and bags and food and actually have them look us in the eyes and say, thank you. Like, you really made, like, my Thanksgiving. You really gave me something. And this is probably the best meal I'm going to have this entire year. And that's something that, you know, I could see firsthand. And, you know, again, when I was growing up, like, I didn't necessarily understand. I was like, oh yeah, charity's good. That's mm-hmm. all I knew. But I never understood why. Yeah. And I mean, people tell me, oh, you know, helping people, it's really good. You know, that's what you should do. But actually being able to look people in the eyes and see that you're actually making an impact on them, it's truly amazing. It's something that I could never actually describe in however long I could even describe it for. You know, it's something, it's beautiful, man. And that's something that he really instilled in me. And, you know, he's been doing that turkey run for a very long time, honestly. And that's just one example, man. He really helps people, provides for people. And that's, you know, I honestly try to strive to live up to that. Because, you know, I mean, it's a great person to live up to, completely honest.
Yeah. What you said there is really great, too. And I was actually going to ask the question, but I let you just take it off. And just like going into like the charity work and things like yeah. that, making the difference, like being that reason that someone else has a good holiday. And like, and obviously people don't get it confused where you're not doing it to make yourself feel good. It's like by doing that, you're automatically going to feel good because you're, yeah. it's just something, I think it's built in, whether it's just human nature, excuse me, or, just part of the way we operate is just helping others and making the difference and putting the positive energy out there and being that light for someone else who doesn't have the situation that you might have. And once you elevate to those positions, like your dad has, is being able to give back.
Yeah,
that's so huge because there are a lot of people in this world who get to a certain point and then just turn their back on people, and it can't be that way. And like, if we're trying to preach a better world, it starts with the people who get to the positions of power and giving back instead of turning the back and making it more difficult for those people.
Absolutely.
And it sounds like, I was just from experience with meeting your dad, talking to him, coaching and all that stuff, he does do that, and he gives you the tools to succeed and be the best possible version, or in our case was like the best possible ball player you could be, and like educating you. And just, even I know he educated me with just my swing, like just like yeah. taking the time to break down the swing. And like, I've never had someone actually take the time to break it down, because like obviously my dad would coach most of my whole life too, but just having someone who's been a different person, because sometimes you always don't want to take advice from your dad. I think a lot of people when you're younger just get frustrated sometimes. Yeah. And having someone else step in and work on your swing and stuff definitely gives you, or baseball terms, gives you a different perspective. And it's nice to have that other coach other than a parent sometimes, which is definitely nice.
Yeah. And even so, like you just said, you know, you were saying he took time to help you on your swing. And like, that was with, you know, a group member. We used to go to literally the cage in this building, and we used to have like 20 or so people there. And he used to spend time with every single person's swing, and he treated everybody equally. And that's just something that I also internalized, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I was there. I mean, he could have easily, you know, because he just came from work. He, you know, he's obviously, remember him still dressing up and yeah. still teaching hitting and everything. It was hilarious. But, you know, he just spent time, like, he could have easily just been like with me the entire time. Some people are like that, you know, I'm gonna help my son, you know, everything. But he spent absolutely almost the same amount of time with everybody. Because he knew it was important, because, you know, he knew that, you know, I could go to this cage whenever I wanted. So, you know, it's not as important to, you know, help me all the time you know, he's got to help, basically he's got to help everybody equally. So, you know, you're there to the cage for a perfect example. He's got to help you in your swing in that moment because he knows you're here to get better. So he's going to help you get better in this moment. Not, oh, I'm going to see him next time or, oh, I'm going to spend more time with Matt. No. And that's one thing that I've also learned. I've really internalized in my life as well. And it's just trying to take the time to really help people, no matter what's going on in your own life. You know what I mean? Like, no matter what, you know, you're facing or, you know, what's going on, you always, always have to make time to really help people because you have no idea what's going on with other people.
Yeah, it's huge. Like, I was going to read that too. It's like, you just don't know what's going on in someone else's life. And that's something I try to preach in this podcast. And I've done it several times of just making that phone call or reaching out. It's just more than just the text message or the social media post. And those are nice and all because, like, I always say social media is a tool.
Yeah.
It's not the only avenue of communication. It can't be. We can't let that become the only way we communicate with each other. We can't let that face-to-face conversation, and if you're not face-to-face, that's where something like FaceTime does make a difference, and that becomes the tool to have those conversations, to keep those relationships going. And that's why it's called the Carol Connection. It's just we're building the connections, and that's key in life, is building connections, because whether if you're trying to get to a school or a new job, just knowing someone possibly and having a relationship with them might be the difference between you and someone else getting hired.
Yeah.
Like, and that's just in, I guess, job terms, but it's like having those connections puts you in different places, and it just, people don't want to have those conversations and like, oh, I don't have time for that, or it's not that important. We could do that another time. It's always prolonging that conversation and
make
just
time.
Make time. Yeah. If it's important to you, you'll make time.
Make time.
It's huge. It's a huge thing. So I also want to talk about a little bit too, just your dad's business. You don't have to go into super depth, just like what it is. And like, if you know a little bit of the story of how he started it, I think it'd be kind of cool.
Cause yeah,
I think eventually I'd love to, we've talked about it before. I'd love to have him on the podcast too eventually. So don't give away too much of enough so the listeners can
I'll give a general overview. So he runs literally the very building that we're sitting in East Providence. He runs a credit card processing company. So essentially all of the software and the hardware that you go, you know, when you hand the bartender or, you know, the waitress or waiter, the, credit card, you know, and they go to the machine, they swipe it, that is the hardware. And obviously the software that runs the machine, that's exactly what they sell. And that's exactly, what they, you know, give to clients, restaurants, businesses, everything there. Their main goal, and again, another thing he's still to me, is small business, the importance of small business. That's and huge. How normal people, you know, trying to create something for themselves is important, you know, not just having, you know, really, really cheap services and that can be provided for everyone. It's more efficient for you, but at the same time, actually helping like the small businesses. Yeah, it might be more, I mean, things they do now, you know, they might, you know, help out small businesses. It might be more expensive. You know, a lot of people have said, you know, why don't your parents go for more larger clients? Well, they want to help small businesses. So the more important aspect is not just revenue, but actually helping other people grow their own business so that they can get more revenue over time because the person has grown their business. And the company itself started in, I believe, 1996. I mean, he's obviously more detailed into this, but from my understanding, really took off around 96, essentially when I was born. And now it's upwards to five different locations now. I mean, he's going, you know, here in East Providence, one in Seekonk, one in Maine, one in Boston. And now we're going for they're going for a location around New York. I obviously can't specify where.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's getting a location now in New York, and he has remote sales reps throughout the country, to be completely honest. And, you know, that's just one thing he's honestly expanding right now. So just to see his absolute success is, you know, something firsthand that teaches me a lot about, you know, business overall. But, you know, there's not a day that, again, like, there's not a day that goes by, you know, that sounds really great, but there's not a day that goes by that, you know, he reminds me of what it was like, even when my siblings were born, about what it was like to really put into a company and not have anything, and really try to grow a business and not have a lot and not have a huge financial backing and try to get things done while taking care of your children and everything. It's not a day that goes by that he doesn't remind me of that, and I'm really thankful for it. And that's essentially what he does for a business. I mean, he has a lot of other, you know, investments. I know they just acquired a software company. I can't tell you what software company, but he just acquired a software company. It would help out with, you know, the software of e-commerce solutions. I'll just say ECS for the rest of the podcast, just for general abbreviation. But yeah, that's essentially what he does. And you know, even so, my mom actually is the president of the company. You know, she was she went to PC actually, so she got her degree and
PC
she became
is Providence College. Yes, for sorry. People who are listening who aren't from this area. Yes. So
yeah, she went to Providence College, got her degree there, and then you know was social work did social working for a while, and then you know she transitioned to his company, honestly. And to be completely honest, it's really funny, and I could easily talk about this. Is you know my dad's CEO, my mom's a president. But, you know, my dad, you know, generally speaking, I mean, there's a sign over there that I'll show you later. It literally says, like, I yell because I care, because he's so passionate. We've talked about that. But it's actually my mom who's the one that they're actually afraid of. Because, I mean, hey, when she has something to say, man, she says it. She says it. I would say that even in my life as well. You know, when she gives me straight up, does not sugarcoat a single thing. My dad will. But my mom won't. And that's also a blessing in itself. And that's kind of what she brought to the company. She brought the stringent and seriousness. And not that my dad wasn't serious, but she really brought the strict deadlines and everything. And, you know, together that power team really grew this company and blew it up. And they, you know, now he, you know, goes on WPRI radio all the time. And now he does like the road show and he's on TV and he has commercials. And I mean, he's killing it. But
yeah, I've seen a lot more too. You see more of the commercials, you hear them on the radio. Oh, like, yeah. It's just expanding, and it's awesome to see too someone who just isn't complacent.
Yeah,
like, you have the success that you have, but that's not enough. And then to still make time for family and then charity work is huge. So like, there's no excuse if you're passionate about something, go after it.
Absolutely,
like, there's no reason not to do it. Like, life is so fucking short. Mm-hmm. Like, people really take it for granted that. This life as a whole, like, we just it's so short. Just think about how many close people that we've lost just within Seekonk as a whole, probably within like our 4 years that we've gone to like our high school. It's probably been a solid handful of kids who have passed away, and it's unfortunate. Like, and things like that put things in perspective. It's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah,
like, why are we wasting time doing all this bullshit? Like, why are we beating around the bush? Like, be straightforward. Like, when you say with your mom, she just gives it how it is. Like,
she does.
That's the way you have to be. And it's nice to have someone, especially a parent figure in your life, to tell you how it is. Like, hey, Matt, like, you're fucking up. Like, obviously not that words,
I've
but like,
No, I've heard that a lot.
So it's just like, just that, like, person in your life that you respect. And it's huge. And it's always good to hear it from parents, adults, friends, just someone in your life, too, just... That keeps it, what they like they say, 100. Like,
oh, 100, of course.
Like, as long as you have someone that like that in your life, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
And I guess now we can start transitioning to what you're doing now and what you're working towards.
Yeah, actually, I actually want to finish. It's totally fine. But I just have my siblings as well.
I mean,
and to be blunt, like I said that about my mom, but she's a sweetheart. At the end of the day, she's the, you know, her and my sister, love them to absolute death, man. Like, they are... two of the most absolute influential women in my life, and I would not be the same person, you know, without them, and that without them guiding me as well. So my mom, like I just said, is really keeps me to reality, and is like, hey, you know, that's great, because me and my dad are actually relatively the same. It's a joke with my family, my extended family, that we're actually like clones. It's obviously a joke, but like we're very similar, you know. But my mom really keeps me to reality, and keeps me in check, and that's the most beautiful thing ever. And but while being an absolute sweetheart and a queen as well. But honestly, like I said, my brother, you know, my oldest brother, who's a doctor, you know, he taught me the value of actually taking care of people and, you know, what it's like, you know, also checking myself. He gives me the reality check a lot and, you know, what the importance of science is as a whole. You know, we have scientific conversations all the time, and it's great to actually be able to have those conversations and actually, you know, expand my mind a little bit. So he's been, he's a brother to me, but he's more than a brother to me. He's a lifelong friend as well. My sister, actually, it's pretty funny. And I'll explain the relationship of how this happened, actually. You know, she keeps me in check a lot. She really helps me out, but she's been like a best friend to me, not just a sister. And she actually is a lawyer. She's a corporate lawyer for a company in Boston. I can actually say the company.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's Burns and Levinson. And she actually transitioned from Ropes and Gray, which is another company in Boston that did not do cannabis law. And then she transitioned and went to a better company. It's actually the company she's at now. Burns and Lemison is the top cannabis company and one of the top biotech law firm companies in the entire Northeast. So she's, you know, part of a company that's huge and growing. And, you know, when we started Apotho Therapeutics, you know, which is the company I'm a president of, she actually got brought in and, you know, we got a phone call one day. And it was funny because it was my sister on the phone. I had no idea. All I know is that we just got a new representative for a lawyer for our company. And we answered the phone and I said, hey, you know, this is Matt and Andrew. You know, this Andrew's the CEO of the company. I'm the president, my brother Andrew. And we said, hey, you know, we're very happy to start this relationship. And she goes, Matt, Andrew? And we're like, Lauren? And at the same time, we're like, yeah, it's Lauren. I'm like, oh, like, what are you doing? She's like, oh, I'm your representative now. They just assigned me to you at random. They didn't even know that we were related whatsoever because she has her husband's last name. So, by the grace, you know, I'm religious personally. So for me, by the grace of God or however spiritual aspect you want to look at it or yeah. even by fate, if you want to, you know, she is our representative and that's just the way it works. And I think it's been the most beautiful thing ever because I can actually work with my sister on something. It's truly amazing, really, because I can actually talk to her about aspects and I can actually keep up with her life a lot more because, she, you know, I see her all the time now, you know. And that's actually, it's pretty funny that way that she transitioned to being our representative and she has been killing it at her company. I would say out of all the siblings, this isn't just a bias. All of the siblings agree that Lauren is definitely the most, like, the best mindset and definitely won the most athletic award for my family as well. Yeah, she kills it, man. She was, she went to school at Assumption and she was a top D2 softball player. I believe she still has the most doubles in NCAA Division II softball league. I could check it, but she killed it, had the most home runs her freshman year. Like, she kills it in absolutely everything that she does. So just being able to look up to, my oldest brother for scientific advice and life advice, my sister for pure determination and how to actually succeed in absolutely everything that, you know, you do in life, and, you know, asking her obviously about like legal questions and everything like that. She's been helping me out with, you know, it's just absolutely every single person in my nuclear family I've looked up to, not as a competition, because that used to be a thing when we were kids, you know, playing sports. I was in high school, you know, it's always a competition who has the better stats at CCONC, everything like that. And to transitioning to now to a more mature role of, wow, like, how can we help each other out? How can we be better people to each other? How can we be better family members to each other? And how could we just make this life more beautiful for absolutely, you know, everyone that we talk to, both in the family and outside the family, and, you know, who we deal with. And finally, my brother Andrew, you know, the youngest brother to me, you know, he went to Mitchell, you know, quit sports very early. He didn't want to do it anymore. You know, that was just his aspect. That's what he wanted to do. And he wanted to go into acting. And so he loves acting. He's great. He's great at it, honestly, man. And, you know, from there, he went from acting to now he's an assistant professor at Mitchell College teaching communications. And, you know, we just got a report back saying that he has like a 20 to 30 waiting list for his classes because they love his classes so much at Mitchell. And he also has a production company that he's doing, you know, shows on and, you know, films. He just applied for a film festival in California and he just got, you know, nominated for a couple things. And he's doing that in his own aspect. And so, if kind of good, draw a perspective or paint a picture, if you will, all of these, you know, people in my family, I truly look up to, you know, as their young, not just as a younger brother, but as, you know, a best friend to every single one of them as well. And, you know, he's also the CEO of the company. And I think on a personal note, before I get into the business, really, he definitely taught me how to laugh at life a little bit. You know, my brother definitely taught me the humor in life and how everything doesn't have to be. I'm a very serious person, yeah. Honestly. You couldn't tell if people don't know me. I'm relatively more of a serious person because I have such a scientific brain, to be honest. He taught me how to, you know, chill a little bit, honestly, yeah. Just to chill and to kind of relax a little bit and really enjoy life. And, you know, my dad and my parents and my other siblings taught me that. But Andrew, yeah. I would say his most quality was to teach me that and how to enjoy things and how to, you know, just be a really good person.
I know, I don't know if they're actively posting stuff, but doesn't he have a podcast? I don't know if they're actively posting it anymore, but I know they still had a podcast.
Yeah, he does. He does. Yeah. Thank you for reminding me, actually. So it's
called, not like we're doing a podcast or anything.
But it's called Not That Clever Podcast. It's really just about the entertainment business and, you know, his personal experiences with that and, you know, what he sees and, you know, the transitions between now. I mean, I was on his podcast actually before. We talked a lot about, you know, science because I'm the nerd in the family. So we talked a lot about science, but especially that podcast as well.
It's on, you know, Apple, right?
It is Apple, on Apple, Spotify, everything. Not right. That Clever is
not
the name.
That Clever. Check it out, people. Yeah. I'm endorsing that, so check that out.
Yeah, that's a beautiful podcast about the entertainment business and, you know, how movies and music and everything around us has transitioned from, you know, back when he was growing up to now. And he just does a really good job, and he just wants to put out good content like you do every single time you have a podcast as well.
I appreciate that.
Anytime, man. And even so now, transition into the wonderful business, actually. So Apotho Therapeutics, For people who don't really know this, besides my nuclear family, it's something I can actually talk about, is I've been involved in this for more than a year. I haven't necessarily done anything with it, and I haven't said anything to anybody because you have to understand, cannabis was different a couple years ago to now. Before, it was like, wow, you're doing cannabis? Like, you're gonna, like, well, something's gonna happen to you. Like, you might, like, go to jail. You're gonna get shut down. Like, you're gonna lose your entire, like, for me, I'm gonna lose my entire biotechnology career, because I was still at, I was, previously, before I did this company, I was actually at MIT. You know, I, if you want, I could talk about that for a little bit if you'd like.
You can do whatever you want. Okay. Your podcast.
So, I mean, at the time, to give you kind of paint a picture, I was at MIT during when I first started this, you know, first started this company, first formed this entire entity. I was at MIT at first as a operations assistant. So just helping people with projects, learning something called bioprocessing. So basically growing things, growing cells in a container to get a product. Usually it's done for drug development to like make pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where my background is. So I was there, you know, it was dangerous. You know, I'm at a federally funded school, but I'm a president of a federally illegal company. You know, what are they going to do to me? Like, am I going to get fired? And that's on my record for being involved in a biotech company overall for the rest of my life. Like, that's so prominent. And, you know, when I was at MIT, really side note about that, I learned a lot. You know, within 2 to 3 months, I had 5 job roles there. I was a lab manager, a cannabis safety officer, EHS, or environmental hazard safety officer. Like I said, I was a project assistant, and I was also a project leader. So basically, to paint a picture, instead of going into every single title, I was in charge of how many supplies we get in the lab, who gets the supplies. I was in charge of 35 plus people in that lab, and I was in charge of 18 projects at once, as well as doing my own research project at the same time. So I was just, you can imagine.
Busy,
I was a little,
busy.
Yeah, yeah. That's the way I kind of like things. So I was doing all of that at once while, you know, transitioning this company, doing paperwork, etc. And really run kind of side notes that I think people would like to hear about or kind of learn from is, you know, I went in there, honestly, man, I was scared as hell. Like I literally was at MIT. Like I was like, dude, I'm not smart enough to be here. Like I was freaking out because I'm like, I'm not smart enough to be here. All these people like got full, like go to MIT. Like they're smart. They're mm-hmm. insane. Like they, you know, they have scholarships, you know, they're doing all this stuff and they have all these projects they want to do. And I'm just like a kid from Seekonk who, you know, is getting his bachelor's degree in biology and like, no, as a nerd, like I know science, but like they're like quote unquote more stigma, like legitly more smarter than I am. So I was totally intimidated at first. And then I really just went there every single day and I was like, you know what? And that's when I started listening to Andy Frisella's podcast, the MFCEO. Love that podcast. But, you know, that's when I started listening to that podcast and I really started internalizing those aspects and, you know, having conversations with my family about how I felt instead of just kind of like hiding things and whatever, because me and my family are very close like that. And so essentially I just internalized the lessons I learned from them in the podcast every day. And I just went into that lab. It was an entire floor in a biology building consisting of 5 total labs. So like it was something that I thought was out of my league. I went in there every single day and I was like, I don't care how dumb I look when I do things. I don't care what people tell me. Like, I'm going to do the best I absolutely can every single day. And it's not a cliche because I went in there every day and I messed up so many times, honestly. I did. I had no idea what I was doing. And I go into that lab. I'm a lab manager at the time when I start. I start designing labs. I start doing things I've never done before. And I was like, why am I even qualified to do this? Like, what am I doing? Until I just said to stop, just stop having like those aspects, stop having those thoughts, like just try. And like, if it's wrong, fix it and try again. Like, that's literally what I internalized every single day. That's why I got 5 positions in 2 months. That's why I was in charge of designing an entire lab for the building. And that's why they put me in charge of everybody, because they're like, wow, this dude comes in every single day. And like, I know it sounds like a pat on my back, but like, that's literally what I was received with at the end. Mm-hmm. And you know, they wanted me to stay really bad, but I just really wanted to transition. And at the end of the day, I cannot thank that school and thank everything I've been through enough, because I would not be that person who I am today. And I would not at all have the same scientific mind that I have now if I did not go there and I didn't stick with it and I didn't go in every single day to make myself better.
Yeah, that's huge. Just being in that situation where you're uncomfortable and you're intimidated and scared and you don't think you belong, is those are the situations which produce that flight or fight response. Yeah. Like, either you're going to become a coward and you're not going to live up to your potential, or yeah, you're going to be like, fuck this. I'm going to go after what I believe and I'm going to be the best possible version of who I can be.
Yeah.
And it starts with just trying.
Hmm.
Trying. It's the like most simplest thing in the world.
Yeah.
But people are afraid of that one step.
Yeah.
And like, go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead.
And honestly, it prepared me for this one moment that's relatively funny and not a lot of people know. I almost died in that lab, actually. Like, seriously, I actually almost died. I was doing some stuff next to something called an autoclave. It's a giant pressure cooker. And essentially...
You allowed to say this?
I am.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to tell the students or anything else. I'm allowed to say this. I said on the last podcast, I'm still here. Yeah. So, so essentially, I was working on this thing. I was doing some lab cleanup, and the student walked in. And he said, hey, can I hang out in here for a little bit? And I was like, yep, totally fine. And I was doing my stuff. I turn on this entire massive pressure cooker. It's pressurized. It's at like 212, I believe, Fahrenheit, I believe it was set at. That's a normal. And I was sitting there, and I closed the door. It's like a giant bank vault. Like, you close the door, you lock it like 3 times, and it just has a giant red light that says, please do not open. Like, pretty simple. So I'm just sitting there, and, this is exactly a moment that, all this prepared me for, where I had to think of my feet. So this person, walked up to this thing called an autoclave, and they tried opening it while it was on. And again, if you open it, it's pressurized air at 25 PSI, sorry, and 212 degrees Fahrenheit. And you open that, it's literally pressurized heated air that will kill you in a blast radius, like, of the whole lab. It was a pretty small, like, lab, that section. So I would have died if you opened it. Like, you can look up videos of people opening up autoclaves. Like, it's deadly. So he went to go open it. I wasn't paying attention. I was doing a million things. And he was like, oh, I'm going to put my own stuff in, AKA like lab equipment, to clean it. Like, I don't want to wait for you to be done. And I could have just sat there and just like froze and had him do that, and I wouldn't be here today. Or I could have responded off the quickness of my feet and then with confidence in myself. And I was like, hey, like, don't open that door. Like, get out of the lab. Like, he literally, when he was opening it, he literally, all he had to do was pull the door and it would have blew up. Like, he undid all 3 locks while I was in the corner of the lab, because I didn't think anyone in their right mind would actually do that. It was literally about to open it. And then I was like, hey, stop. Like, you got to stop. Like, I literally like pushed, like, gently pushed him out of the way, not like force the kid, push him out of the way, lock all the things. I was like, get out. Like, I had to report it. I had to go through paperwork. Like, I did the right thing that I had to do. And I know it seems relatively simple, but like, I'm telling you, if I was the same person I was when I started in that lab to then, I would not be here, because I would have froze. I would have been scared for my life. I would have froze. I would have not said anything, and then I would not be here. And yeah. So essentially, that actually what happened is he doesn't actually go to school there anymore because of that incident, because it's a very serious incident. And that's just, I'm trying to personalize this aspect and saying that you gotta respond, like, have a beautiful life, respond to people, but also like be confident in yourself when the moment happens and be ready to respond to something.
And doing the right thing. Like,
yes.
That's huge too. I think that was a great example of that. What we're talking about here is like being confident in who you are and doing the right thing and going through those things that make you grow and evolve. And I think a lot of people are afraid to do that. And when I came into making this podcast, I always talk about it on every episode for the most part. It's just, I got faced with the, what's my purpose?
Yeah.
What am I doing here? Like, I got a job and was in a good company. It was Fortune 500 company. I'm doing great and traveling and I'm not happy. Like, what's wrong? Like, you're doing everything that you should be doing, right? Mm. No. And I was like, what matters to you? What do you care about? And part of that was family and friends is a big part of that. And I know last night I set up a flag football. For people who don't know me, I'm a big fan of football, and I played my whole entire life. So once high school ended, it kind of like, that's where my life really started changing, was like, you dedicate my whole life to it. Like, that's the sport that I fell in love with from the beginning. Like, and I was afraid to play. Like, my dad signed me up, but it was because I forget what grade it was, but I wrote it in a paper that I wanted to play football, and I did not want to play football. But he's like, oh, you want to play? Yeah, all right, sign me up. And honestly, it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because it taught me so many life lessons. Obviously, we talked about baseball, but for football, it's huge life lessons through that. So having the opportunity to set up flag football and meet with all the people who I used to play with, and friends of their friends and friends of their friends, and just a wide variety of people, and connecting and taking that hour to 2 hours out of like one day a week just to play. Like, instead of going to a bar and getting drunk and wasting money, and let's go play football. Let's get some let's be active and like have some fun and play some music and just have a good time. And I think that's, for me, that's something that I value, and just adds to the whole point of just being yourself and putting yourself out there, reflecting back to the podcast and how I got to that position, which is something like that. It's just connecting. And I'm like, what am I good at? I'm like, what do I like doing? And I was really getting into podcasts more and more, because audio is just such a huge thing right now. And like, it's, I think it's going to be like the next big thing. Just like, even when you think about just reading, how audiobooks are just like, that's the thing now. Like, anything audio is just the way. It's just, it's about time. Like, when you think about the time that you have in a day, do you really have a lot of time to sit down and watch an hour-long video? Most people don't.
No.
So audio is just huge. Like, whether you're at an office or in your car or at the gym or wherever, like, putting your headphones or in your car or whatever, just playing a podcast, like a book, like an audio book. Like, that's how people nowadays consume content. And that led to my realization. I'm like, I should make a podcast. Like, I didn't realize it till later on. Like, I was, as a kid, we always, like, my dad would always record, like, you know how your dad's always have, like, camcorders when you're younger, recording every moment and stuff. And it's like, and I was watching, and I'm just like, every video, I'm like, hey, record me. And I'm like, and now I'm like, I'm a really introverted person. I'm like, what happened there? Like, what, why am I not like that? And I'm like, but I can be like that. Yeah. And like, it's just some switch that I have where I could be in out like an introvert, but I could be extroverted in a conversation like this, where I'm very comfortable talking to you, and I'm very comfortable talking to people one-on-one, just something I'm very good at. And that's why this podcast came to what it was. So, not to take too much time away from myself, but going back towards you and where you got into with your cannabis company.
Yes, so now I will fully transition to the cannabis business. I just want to touch on all that. So we started this about a year and a half ago when I started this. Like, I was working there, and, you know, I thought to myself, you know, to be completely honest, I didn't consume cannabis until my freshman year of college. One of my roommates I ended up living with actually got me into cannabis as a whole, you know, and he got me like knowledge about the product and everything like that. And then, you know, I was like, you know what, maybe I should drop the stigma and actually, like, you know, see every perspective from this and not just be like, cause I was a huge nerd. I didn't like to do, you know, anything and consume cannabis or anything. I'm not saying that's a positive or a negative thing if you consume or don't consume anything.
I think it's just, I think it should at least, alcohol and cannabis. Yeah, I think it should at least be on the same level of alcohol. People, like, even if you just compare the health benefits, like, it's like,
if it's not for you, that's absolutely perfect. Yeah, but for me, exactly. I just judged it because I just wanted to. You know what I mean? I didn't have any premise behind it whatsoever. And so when I started, you know, consuming everything, I was like, you know what, like, maybe this isn't so bad. Like, I know there were talks about maybe doing a cannabis company, and, you know, me and my brother were just like, you know what, let's just do this. Let's do it. Let's see where it goes. If it gets shut down, then we can just go on with our regular careers, aka him for acting and producing, and for me, biotechnology, science, and everything. And I thought originally that my path with science and cannabis would never cross in a million years whatsoever, any day of the week or year, right? And to really reiterate that, like, I never thought I would have the mindset I have now doing this business that would relate to science whatsoever. I thought, oh, I'm just going to, you know, for lack of a better term, very bluntly, be like, you know, I'm just going to have a business that sells weed to people and just gets them high. Like, that's what I originally thought when I started the business, right? And now, totally different, right? So, you know, that's how we essentially started the company. We're like, we're going to start this. Like, I wish I had a story that, you know, we had this idea when we were doing something. Like, no, we literally were just like, we're going to start a cannabis company and it's going to be great. That's exactly how we started it. And so, I know it's not the most amazing story, but it's what I really want to hit upon is not how it started, but how we grew as mm-hmm. people and how we really grew as a business. So, you know, when we started, we were doing things, we were figuring out applications, we got consultants in to do paperwork, we did, you know, payroll for them, absolutely everything. So now, in the first quarter of 2020, we're not open yet. We're opening actually in about, you know, we're projected to open in March or April in Plainville, Massachusetts. This is actually something I can talk about. And for anyone interested in following us whatsoever, the Instagram is apotho.therapeutics.ma. And even if you don't follow, that's totally fine, because you're going to love to come to our store, because we are going to be.
I'll tag it in the post too. Yeah. So if you follow me on Instagram, it'll be on my Instagram, my Facebook. Like, that'll be, if you don't have a Facebook, you should create a Facebook, by the way.
I do have one. I just,
preparing it's, right now. You're getting ready to release it.
Well, yes. And right now, the marketing laws behind cannabis companies and, you know, social media is really walking on eggshells, nails, actually.
I definitely is. I've seen some stuff just
taken down all the time.
Yeah, people, you got to be careful. You just throw the hashtag of the word or something, gets taken down.
I'm waiting for the market to kind of mature and we actually get open so I can consistently post. Because right now it's under construction. It's going to be
ready. If I give you any advice from just my experience of social media, is Facebook's the place you want to be.
Yeah.
People don't understand. People are like, oh, Facebook's for old people.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Facebook is like the place to the be thing. Still. Like, that is like where everything, like, I don't even know if you realize this, like on Instagram when you open it now, what does the bottom say? It says from Facebook on it. Yeah. I don't know if you have updated your Instagram, but when I opened it, I noticed the other day it says from Facebook. Maybe want to use it a little less, but no, I'm kidding.
But like, honestly, I want to be very blunt, and I'm confident because it's my own company. I'm telling you straight up to even listeners on this podcast, you will not want to go to anywhere else. I the amount of effort that personally I have put in, my brother has put in, and the amount of just time and sleepless nights and hours and not eating, everything that we've done to get this thing open and get this thing going, you're going to want to go. Not because I will not sit here. I will not say we're going to have, you know, XX product. We're not going to, you know, have this amazing, you know, different strains, everything like that. I really don't believe in that whatsoever, personally. We can get into cannabis in a little bit and I'll tell you why. But the amount of my own personal, like, essence that I've poured into this, and my brother has, and everyone a part of the Potho team has, we're gonna blow this out of the water. So right now that location is, again, in Plainville, Massachusetts. We're about 4 miles from Gillette. We're literally right next to a restaurant, aka it's the same building as the dispensary. So if you want to get food, just go next door. We're not even a mile from a Plainville casino, and we're only a couple miles from Rentham Outlets. So we're around absolutely everything, and we picked that location for a reason. And essentially, when I mean, like, we're going to blow it out of the water, I will knock on wood. We're sitting at a wooden table, by the way. I'm knocking on wood, actually. Our products and our entire experience when you walk into that place, it's going to be blow everyone out of the water. And I'm telling you that because I have a standard that I want to walk into a place like a dispensary. Like this, it's a dispensary, by the way, recreational only, by the way, just so all the listeners understand. I know we've talked about this a lot, but the amount of, you know, cool things we're going to do with it, how we're actually going to educate people on how to use cannabis, not just, oh, you know, smoke it or eat it. No, like how you actually can statistically should be using it in a health conscious way to not have problems that are arising, like, you know, cannabis sensitivity disorders and diseases that happen, because it's a beautiful compound. It's a beautiful, beautiful product to use, but
a lot of people abuse it.
Yes.
Like, it's like alcohol. Yes. People just get a hands on and just abuse it.
Yes. And our entire company specifically, not just me, because I'm not the whole company. It's the whole team, really. We're all about helping people, educating people, and paving the way for the future of cannabis as a whole. And right now we have that location opening up. We have a location in southern Massachusetts. I cannot actually give, you know, the location I've told you, but I cannot publicly say it until
it's fine.
We secure one more thing, as in like 2 weeks from now we're actually securing the final, it's called an HCA, it's a host community agreement, and we're securing that actually in 2 weeks. We basically got it 2 weeks ago, but in 2 weeks I have a personal meeting with them. I couldn't go because I recently got a concussion, and you know me, I don't typically like to sit down for a long time and do nothing. But basically, we're opening in southern Massachusetts, we're opening in Plainville, we're opening in the very large populated area, the Boston area. I'm not going to tell you where.
Yeah, no, we don't have to.
We potentially are going to open, you know, somewhere around there. I'm not going to obviously say where. And we just secured a massive 80,000 square foot grow in Western Massachusetts inside an old industrial building. And our mission really is to, you know, create products for all types of people. So low THC products, low CBD products, percentage wise, because not everybody, me and my dad joke about it all the time. We say not a lot of people want moonshine. People want to have like an equivalent to a beer, right? They want to just relax a little bit. Not everybody wants to get, you know, to be honest, and apologies for language, but they don't want to get higher their fucking mind every single night just because they can get higher their fucking mind. Some people just want to relax, man. Some people want a product that's actually not going to, you know, mess with their brain too much. There's not high THC. And the only reason I say these things is we're going to have those products, right? We're going to have high THC, high CBD, like we'll have everything. But what I can really assure to, you know, yourself and even viewers, as a company, our mission isn't to just sell weed. Our mission is to create a product that actually is healthy for people. And then if people want and choose to like the high CBD, high THC things, let them. But the real aspect is scientifically, statistically studying things so that people don't have to, you know, be addicted to things. I see it, you know, in every single industry, there's always a lot of negatives to it. You know, I don't understand why you can't create a product that's for the people.
It's money. It becomes about money, and then politics and all that other crap gets in and pollutes the whole thing. I mean, just look at tobacco industries, look at alcohol, like the whole thing, it just becomes about money. And I just hope cannabis never becomes that.
That's one thing we're trying to do.
Yeah, it's companies like that. And I don't know if you've listened to a lot of the podcasts, but my first one with Eric Lazito works at the Alternative Compassion Services in Bridgewater, and his place is strictly medical. And he talks about it, and I've seen this company firsthand, and they do a very good job of trying to educate people, like you're saying, and like putting out a good quality product and helping. There's more geared toward medical patients and veterans, so like making that difference in people's lives who want that and who want the education behind that. So it's nice that another company like that you're starting up yourself is about that, and I think people need to focus on that and educate people with. So
yeah, and even overall, like even who we hire, that's something we've thought about a lot. You know, everyone says like, oh, it's gonna be really easy to hire people. Hire just younger people or older people who just love weed, and they're gonna work with it. That's not how I see it. I like a lot of our goal as a company, I'm not gonna go into the percentages, but essentially we're hiring mostly women and mostly people that are minorities, because that when I say underrepresented in the cannabis industry, I mean that in the most serious and major way possible.
And a lot of
women and minorities are very places. Yeah. Women and minorities are very underrepresented in the cannabis industry as a whole. And so hiring, you know, higher up positions that are women or minorities, either way, you know, we want to fix the problems that the industry is having right now, because we want to be the gold standard. We want to be what people look at and say, wow, that's not just a cannabis company. They're a truly good company that cares about people, what goes into people. And they're making a difference in today in 2020, not as a whole in the industry, but as of today in 2020, they're making strides to who they're hiring, what they're doing, in the direction that they're going in. And going along with that is we even want to pair up with universities that have cannabis labs, and we want to collaborate with them to try to get more research behind it and get students into this industry that are studying biology. So you don't have to go, like me, you don't have to go into biotechnology, you don't have to go into pharmaceuticals necessarily, you don't have to do those aspects. You could also go into cannabis, and there could be a true science behind that.
And I think it's a really good background. Sorry to cut you off, but I think it's a really good background that you have, is that pharmaceutical side, because like that side is so dangerous to talk about and dangerous in our society, where it's abused and a lot of it's money and corruption. So if you want, you could touch a little bit about that and how talks about how it translates to the cannabis side.
Yeah, so when I started getting this biotechnology degree, now that I'll finish next semester, essentially I wanted to take what I know and transition to a cannabis company. And all I've been taught, so biotechnology, to really touch upon my degree very quickly, it's the business and the science aspect. So it's not just like, you know, I say biotechnology, for some people like, well, what does that even mean? So I specialize, you know, genetic engineering, drug discovery, you know, running an actual biotech company, how to deal with the FDA, actually hiring people, how a little bit of chemistry, but That's essentially my background. So I touched upon all the things you need to open a biotech company. Like I could, that was my plan. Like I get my master's degree, I'm going to go to pursue a biotech company. I was going to do rare diseases. And, you know, I transitioned that to a cannabis company. And so I thought to myself, I sat back, I looked in the mirror and said, you know, how can I take my background? How can I take exactly what I know and how can I apply it to cannabis? And so that goes into, you know, what I talked about, the research, the scientific statistics, actually educating people on how to use this properly. But what I really want to do is my entire personal mission for this company is not just sell weed to people in dispensaries. It's really for the cultivation side, do research with universities and develop compounds to actually treat diseases. Because there's only one company right now in the entire world that does cannabis-derived pharmaceuticals, and that's GW Pharmaceuticals. And this is all public knowledge, so this is something I can actually talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, anyone can look this up. But luckily, I have a good knowledge behind this. They develop, you know, a product called Epidiolex. It's a CBD-derived pharmaceutical that actually treats people who are 2 years older and younger that have seizures, and it really has been a tremendous treatment for these young kids, young children, actually. Yeah. And that's exactly what I inspire to be, essentially. I want to, you know, have a separate aspect of treating diseases, because even so, I've looked at other diseases that I can't talk about because we're actually going to be doing research on that, and I can't just say everything we're going to be doing.
Yeah, can't give out the Krabby Patty secret recipe, you know?
That's hilarious, man. But there's essentially a lot of diseases that don't have a lot of treatments, and cannabis compounds, aka cannabinoids, you can call it, like, you know, even some of the terpenes and flavonoids in it, any of those, it's under the classification of botanicals, essentially, because it's coming from plants. Any of those compounds have been shown to affect these diseases in a positive way. And so my thinking is, wow, I can take these already active compounds that help people. And again, and some people don't like this, but this is how biotechnology works. This is how drugs work. You manipulate them a little bit, and you do a lot of testing, years of testing, and you actually help people and cure these diseases. My dream is to have this company, sell weed to people and have them, you know, get with the product they want, the quality they want, not affect them. But at the end of the day, my true vision and my true dream is to actually cure disease in some aspect. I don't care if it's this cannabis company. I don't care if I have to open another company. I don't care if I have to work for a university. I want to cure disease in my lifetime, period. That's it. That's always been my mission. That's always been my vision. Ask any single person that knows me very close. I've always talked about playing with cells and doing diseases. And I'm serious about that. And that's something that I can manifest right now. And I know I'll manifest it in a couple of years.
That's huge too, especially just coming from the pharmaceuticals and having that mindset of helping people and educating people with cannabis as a whole. Like, that's just huge. Like, there's not enough education and studies around it too. So, like, I think that's very crucial to do, because people just aren't educated. That's a huge issue. And like, having a platform like this to talk about it and be like, this is the studies and this is what we talk, like, this is what you've done. You know what you're talking about. You're not just pulling shit out of your ass. Yeah. Like, if you want, go fucking Google some shit. Like, you learn a lot on the internet, people. Like, people are just like, oh, I don't know how to do this, or I don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
Like, bro, we have a goddamn computer in our pockets. Yeah. Like, just think about from, like, our parents' generations to now. It's crazy.
Yeah. And honestly, man, like, if anyone's calling bullshit, like, I will gladly send you the resources to what I'm saying. I would love to. Because, honestly, it's not anyone's fault that they're uneducated. It's really, actually, if there is fault, it's really the people who are doing the entire science as a whole and not educating the public, essentially. Mm-hmm. It's not the public's fault, because look, everyone has a lot of things in their lives, man. Everybody has the same 24 hours in a day. And if you're focused on other aspects that isn't necessarily science, I completely understand the skepticism, because unless you spend time actually learning all of these aspects in science, you're like, well, why the hell would we do that? Like, for example, like I just said, for a perfect example, oh, we're going to manipulate the compound. Some people are just like, well, what do you mean we're manipulating compounds? Like, what is that going to do to my body? Like, unless you spend the time studying to what that actually means and how it affects people statistically, you're freaked out by it. I mean, I literally just said alter compounds. Like, you know how crazy that might sound to some people? Like, what do you mean? Like, why can't it be natural? It is. Every single pharmaceutical compound comes from a natural derivative. So everything comes from something. You don't just, well, you can. You can synthesize chemicals. But basically what I'm saying is, like, it's of the part of the job of the people who are actually doing the research and producing these things to educate people and actually teach them. And they don't want to do that. They don't, because it's a lot of money. It's a lot of time. And fortunately, that's exactly what I want to do, because personally, I don't necessarily enjoy hearing pushback to things that are scientifically proven and statistics behind it. Yes, things are subject to change, but I just want to make the world a better place. And that's by curing disease, because in this degree, I've learned about so many diseases, and I'm not a med student, so I give a lot of credit to them because they study a lot of diseases more in depth than I do. But I've had a general broad perspective of all these diseases that people have from birth, and it's heartbreaking, the treatments that they're given, and what, because we don't know.
The addictive drugs, too, that a lot of these people are given, too.
In that aspect, yes. So in the aspect of the opioids, yes, I would say that.
And that's huge on mental health, too. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I talk a lot about mental health in my podcast.
Yeah.
If you want to touch a little bit about that, too.
Yeah. And to finish up one aspect before I go into the opioids and mental health thing, it's the actual treatments that they're given that we don't, like, they're given a treatment, for example, for something called, like, an enzyme replacement. You're replacing something in their body because they're deficient in it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty simple. But, you know, they might have to drink. There's one disease that I know of that they have to drink, you know, like a liter of cornstarch 3 times a day, and they can only sleep 3 hours at a time or else they'll die. So essentially, they can only stay awake. They can only stay asleep for 3 hours a day. They have to drink a liter of cornstarch because I could go into it, but I really don't want to. We have more important things to talk about. But essentially, that's the best treatment for that disease, for example, right? For a biotech company, they come in, they do more treatments, but they have to take this pill like 4 times a day and actually helps their disease.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people see opioids and they're just like, nope, all of biotech is bad. No, that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you do put time into the research and looking at all these diseases, biotech companies generally do a lot of great things, but they also do a lot of terrible things. It's a two-sided sword, right? So essentially, what I'm saying is there's a lot of diseases that can be treated in a positive way by altering chemicals and doing certain things in a positive aspect. It's not all bad, but what you're shown a lot and what you read a lot about and what you see a ton is opioids. And opioids are an absolutely terrible example of the potential of biotechnology as a whole and how it can really help people. Because there are people that, there are diseases and people that you've never seen before, diseases you've never heard of, and these people suffer. Like I just told you about 2-year-olds having seizures, and you know, I could never, before I even learned about that, I could never even fathom that whatsoever, right? Mm. So there are companies doing great things, and that's something that, you know, biotech companies should strive for. But again, now going into the opioids and mental health, you know, a lot of the statistics show that a lot of opioid users are now going to cannabis. I'm in no way a doctor. I'm not recommending absolutely anything, but statistically, that's exactly what they're doing. They're going over to cannabis because they want pain relief, but they don't want the as drastic, specifically, side effects that they get from opioids, right? Now, cannabis can be addictive, but essentially it's not as addictive and doesn't hijack your brain the way opioids do with your opioid receptors. So, right now, the only way the opioid epidemic actually happened, and again, I could easily send sources, I would love to, is because the FDA usually is in control of distribution. The FDA actually gave it to a biotech company that I'm not going to talk about because I can't do that. And it's all public knowledge. Like, please feel free to look this up. But I just personally can't do it because it's my industry.
Mm-hmm.
They gave the job of distributing opioids that's supposed to stay in hospitals and supposed to be for terminally ill patients, aka cancer patients, or for not for having children. That's terrible. They don't do that. But typically having terminally ill cancer patients, you give them, you know, pain relieving aspects because it's for comfortability before they are, you know, pass away. So the FDA was charged of this. The FDA is busy. It was busy. They had a lot of drug companies to handle. They gave it to a drug distribution company that's a biotech company. They're the number one distribution company in the world. And they were just like, well, we know how to do really one really great thing. It's how to get the drug from the discovery to the patient's hands. And usually that works, but works in a way that's positive. It's good because sometimes for drugs that work, you get it to the people having seizures. You get it to people that are diseases. You get them in the hand. That's the positive thing. But with the opioid compound, it's a different compound. They're like, we're going to do the same thing we know how to do with all these drugs because we help people. So we're just going to do the same thing with opioids. The mistake was that it's not the same. It's a very addictive compound. It's going to affect people. You see what I'm saying? So I'm saying it's not bad. The distribution company did that and didn't look at the specific compound, but it's not bad that they do distributing compounds overall. Do you understand?
Yeah.
All right. So essentially that's what they were given. And that's why there was a huge opioid epidemic, because they easily got it in the doctor's hands to give to the patients. That's essentially how it started. There's a ton of factors into it, but that's a general, that's my general take to it, right? So now you have a ton of people on these opioids who are very dependent on these opioids and want to get them off. If you take them off, depending on the rate or level of addiction, they will, it's like, it's almost like an alcohol addiction. If it's severe, they will die from, you know, not having it. So that's why there's other opioid drugs that are lower doses to wean people off opioids. You know, so it's not like you can just go cold turkey, because if your addiction is very severe, you'll die.
Yeah. And now they just specifically talk about people with mental health. I know for me, it affects people in my life, and it gets scary, because when these people become so dependent on these drugs, and like, say, whether it's FDA or some type of government or pharmaceuticals, like, all right, we're no longer making that. So now these doctors have to wean these people off of medicines that they've been on for years and use. There's plenty of cases out there where they make these drugs legal now, and now those people have to switch to something else, and it's like, they need that now. Like, you have made them become so reliant on something that their body is going to completely swing the other way now. And especially with mental health, someone's like really depressed, if they're on like antidepressants and things like that, taking them off just has that huge fucking dip again. And it's just like, it makes it all worse. It's like, that's why I think something like cannabis would be a useful tool for a lot of people and things like that.
And actually, the really excellent segue into mental health, actually. Really quick, Northeastern actually is doing synthetic-derived cannabis compounds to get people off opioids whatsoever. So that's why I mentioned that partnership overall. Like, that's what they're doing. That's how they're tackling the issue. You know, the people there, Sweden, they even had a something called harm reduction. You essentially give them the compound, you get them off it over time, and it was like 95% effective. And I think there's one in Brockton, actually, a harm reduction place. But essentially, there are ways to combat this opioid epidemic. But, you know, it's a good lesson. And this is me being very blunt, but it's a very good lesson to learn when we start making new compounds, honestly. And in terms of mental health, like, you have to really think about what you're putting into your body. And I know that's used so much with nutrition, but even pharmaceuticals, like, take the time. It's not like they want you to be, you know, it's not like they want to kill you, right? But at the same time, you
some
have
people
to,
will debate that.
Some people will debate that, right? So I even debate that with myself. But generally speaking, companies that want to treat disease as a whole is exactly where I'm coming from. I'm not talking about opioids specifically. I don't want to get into that issue. But as a whole, right, you have to really think about what you're looking into your body. And you have to just talk to people, like, get to know what you're doing. Like, for example, if you're a cancer patient and these things happen, they educate you on what's going into your body.
I think a lot of people, what they should do if you're on medication, is just Google your medication.
Google your specific medication. Like, don't go on WebMD.
Even regardless, just like research what you're taking. Yeah, like, no, some people are just so blindly, whatever, that's what my doctor told me to take, I'm going to take it. Like, obviously you should trust your doctors for the most part. I'm not saying don't trust doctors, but it's your life. It's your health.
Yeah.
Take responsibility for it.
Do you see the pharmaceutical commercials that say, ask your doctor? They literally mean, ask your doctor. They're not just like, oh, ask your doctor, we're going to put that in the commercial because it's going to help us earn our... No, literally ask your doctor. Like, that's why it's in there. If you have questions, you have concerns, you talk to your doctor. You don't just take it and then just be like, yeah, well, the commercial said ask your doctor, but it's a doctor. Like, ask your doctor. Like, he is there to give you information about what you're taking for your health. And overall, like, one really quick thing on mental health as a whole, like, I really think that nutrition and medicine should be one and the same.
Yeah, definitely.
Honestly. And so, you know, talking to your doctor and kind of getting your knowledge on nutrition, and as well as, you know, taking care of yourself, and actually if you need medication, because if you have a disease, you probably, like, for example, cancer, I would strongly recommend a medication, because that's exactly what these companies are designed for. And but having the knowledge and taking the time out to talk and learn, let me emphasize the word learn and knowledge, but actually understand this. And I think that's something really people should try to do. And at the same time, on the other side, that's what companies should try to reach out. So, you know what I mean? People should meet in the halfway. Patients should really reach out to know and learn what exactly is going into their body and how they take care of themselves. And the other end, meeting halfway as well, are the biotech companies that actually reach out to people and say, hey, you know, we're giving you this. This is what we have done years. And it takes, by the way, it takes $2 billion to produce a drug. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
$2 billion in 16 years. That's statistically what it is to produce a small molecule. or a biologic. I mean, there are a ton of other examples that are not that, but generally speaking, across the board, that's exactly what it takes to produce a drug, right? So at the end of the day, it takes that much. They want to get it to patients. But at the same time, what I'm trying to explain is that people and the companies need to meet halfway and say, hey, this is the best shot we have at treating disease or doing aspects. Let's meet in the halfway and have a conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I think needs to happen.
Yeah, that was definitely well said. So, I mean, we are definitely coming towards wrapping up. I definitely want to wrap up soon. I know you got some stuff that you need to take care of as well. So before I ask my last question, is there anything you'd like to add before I ask my last thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So if I was to add one more thing very important for viewers to kind of think about, is reiterating from the beginning to now, honestly, really quick, is, like you said, life is very short. So spend, like, instead of, I'm not criticizing whatsoever, instead of going on, you know, and paying attention to things that don't necessarily require to your health, I would say treat every single day as positive as possible. Treat everyone like it's literally the last time you're going to see them, and just try to educate and learn about your body in this world as best as we can.
Yeah, that's really well said. So my question that I like to ask every single one of my guests and how I end my podcast is, what would your advice be to someone who is trying to pursue something that they're passionate about?
Don't stop no matter what. And really quick, I mean, like, perfect example, if it's 2 a.m. and you can't sleep and you have an idea, stay up, get it done. If you, you know, if that require, I don't necessarily condone this, but just don't stop. Like, no matter what, like, some people, like, a ton, like, even the cannabis company, they were just like, that's stupid. Like, why are you going to do a cannabis company? You have a biotech career. Okay, well, that's exactly what I want to do. Or, oh, I didn't sleep last night. Well, you should get more sleep. Well, no, this company isn't going to do itself. So I will not sleep until this thing's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's, the advice is, if you're passionate about something, do it. Because no matter what you've learned, no matter who you are, you can manifest absolutely anything that you exactly want to do, because it comes from your heart, it comes from your mind, and that's all you got. The end of the day, and the people around you.
I fucking love that, man. So I do appreciate you taking the time to talk about your life and what you got coming up. Once again, kind of plug in your Instagram right here for your company.
So it's
looking at me just like, yeah, like, what's going on?
No, so it's again, it's Apotho, apotho.therapeutics.ma. And that is my company's Instagram, and it's going to be expanding as we speak, and we're opening Q1 2020 in March. All right. So come to Plainville.
Yeah, expect that. And I'll tag you guys in my Instagram posts, and if you want to get in contact with Matt, you could do it through me or reach out through his cannabis company. I don't know if you're in control of the Instagram or not, but I think
I'm controller of all
the Instagram. So I think people can contact you in a variety of different ways. So once again, thank you for taking time out of your day to sit down with me and do this interview, and I think a lot of people are going to get some really good positive energy from this one.
Thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. So once again, thank you to everyone that has listened and continued to show love and sharing the podcast with your family, your friends, with people who you don't even know, and people who are listening. I just saw I had a viewer from Ireland, so I appreciate that as well. So I want to thank that person as well, and continue just to put out positive energy. And if you like the podcast, please rate and review it. I really do appreciate that. If you haven't had the chance to rate it or review it, if you listen on Apple, please do, or like, subscribe, follow on Spotify. I'm available on all the major platforms. If you don't want to listen there, you can listen to it on my website at thecarolconnection.simplecast.com. And you know, once again, stay positive, and I'll see you guys next time. Bye.